Welcome back to the No Halftime Podcast. This is the DFSR crew, James Davis and
Doug Norrie.
Yeah, and we're taking over the podcast today to talk about our thoughts for week 14 coming up here, share what we're targeting in terms of no halftime challenges for the week, where we think we can get some value, where we think we can potentially cut against the grain and get some challenges out there that will get accepted. If you're not familiar with no halftime, if you're checking this out through the DFSR feed, no halftime, well, I don't know how you'd be unfamiliar with no halftime at this point, given how long we've been talking about them and how much we love their app. But no halftime is a great app for people who like to do one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges. So basically, you can go into the app, you can see other people listing one-on-one challenges. So they might be offering up Marshawn Lynch up against LeSean McCoy, or you know, DeAndre Hopkins up against Todd Gurley, really any kind of challenge that you'd want to see out there, people will throw out there from any given week. Or you can make challenges yourself. Maybe there's somebody you're really high on this week. Like we'll talk about some guys today that we're issuing challenges for. You can issue Carson Wentz versus the field, every quarterback in the NFL, if you really believe in him, and so on. If you head on over to nohalftime.com, you can get a 50% you can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So Doug, we're talking no halftime stuff today. I know you said you were putting in a bunch of challenges earlier this week. What are you seeing this week in terms of kind of the types of challenges that are out there, the types of stuff that you're finding value on? It seems like that'd be a great place to kick it off.
Yeah, I didn't actually throw in a bunch. I accepted some in there. I find that sometimes to be easier, just like less brain power to kind of go in.
Yeah, it takes a pulse of the community too, you know, like what are people kind of keying in on? Who are kind of the public targets? No halftime also great, by the way, for your other DFS purposes to get a sense for, you know, who people are high on and stuff. So what did you see when you were in there?
Yeah, there were some interesting ones that are getting thrown out there. You know, it's interesting to land on where people value some high price ones. Actually, this one wasn't in there, but it's funny. You're asking what was in there, and then I'm going to switch to something that wasn't in there. But I think we can. it's not a bad place to start. When you see a guy like Kamara come up in the challenge this week, I'm wondering how far. You know, this is a guy we've talked about on our other podcasts in terms of where we see him, you know, him relative to maybe the way the public views his skill set, and or like not necessarily his skill set, his fantasy upside is probably a better way to, I think most everyone would agree that he's amazing. But where his fantasy upside seems to be curbed in the long run, in the aggregate, because he just doesn't touch the ball enough. I'm wondering what level, if I was to throw out some challenges with Kamara, I'm wondering how far down the running back chain in terms of just like the, because I think we'd all agree there's tiers of running backs. There's a very top tier, which includes probably three or four guys. Then the tier kind of does fall off after that. And I'm just wondering, if I were to start throwing out some guys, where you would take on Kamara. I know it's a Thursday night game and Ingram is going to play tonight. There was some doubt as to whether he was going to be able to suit up tonight. And I think if you weren't able to suit up, then clearly Kamara becomes the very best overall running back option in football. But, I'm wondering your thoughts on where we would start tiering a guy like Kamara. So like,
yeah, it's relevant going forward anyway, even if this week people aren't doing it because of the Thursday thing.
Right. So like, if you saw a Le'Veon Bell versus Alvin Kamara challenge out there,
I would take it independent of matchup. Doesn't matter if Bell could have the worst matchup and Kamara could have the best, and I would take Bell.
That's interesting because Bell does have one of the worst matchups this week. He has the Baltimore, which ranks right now first overall in DVOA in overall defense. Very, very good against the run as well. So you could in some ways say Bell does have the worst matchup going.
Yeah, he's
going
to have twice as many or more touches than Kamara if normal things happen. And for that reason, I think he's a better play. Kamara the last 2 weeks, and granted, he's insane when he actually touches the ball, but 14 carries and 11 targets in the last 2 weeks. That is just not the usage of a guy that you want to put up against Le'Veon Bell. So yeah, I would be thrilled to get that challenge accepted. In a heartbeat. I mean, last week, 2 weeks ago against Green Bay, Bell had 20 carries and 12 receptions in one game. Bell's no slouch in terms of what he can do when he touches the ball either. So yeah, no brainer. I mean, he's not even in the same conversation as Bell. You're going to have to go down the list quite a ways to find someone probably that I would rather have Kamara over.
Let me just give two more, and then we can kind of move off, and we'll kind of get into some of these other plays.
But these are challenges. I think you can get accepted, so I think this is relevant.
Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, I'm also going to put up into that elite usage category.
Yeah, instantly take both of those guys. I would take LeSean McCoy too while we're here. I think there's several guys. I think Kamara is a good real life player, and just get ready for the week where he is only one of the best running backs in the NFL, not historic, right? Like if he goes out there and has 5 yards per carry and 7 yards per reception, which would be great for most running backs in any given week, he'll be terrible on this kind of usage. So That's what I'm preparing for. I think people just always, people want to get excited. They love the story of someone coming out of nowhere and being better. They love to dream on, could this be one of the all-time greats that we're watching unfold? And sometimes you're watching one of the all-time greats unfold, and most of the time you're not. So for that reason, I'll take basically any running back on FanDuel pretty much over, like, say, 7,500. I'll take them over Kamara for this week.
Interesting. I'm not sure I land with you there on McCoy just because of the quarterback play, though. If they were to just to start feeding him the ball over and over again, I mean,
Indianapolis, great matchup. I don't know.
Yeah, Peterman looked like he's going to be back under center, though, with Tyrod Taylor getting hurt. So that's kind of my concern, only with McCoy. The other guys, I think I'm with you. I think you could throw out challenges. And again, this is not just for week 14. I think we can do this for week 15 as well, and kind of just going forward, because this is the public narrative on Kamara, is, like you said, the public narrative is, especially from people that don't really understand sample sizes and just don't really understand outlier performances. This guy has lived in, like, just the upper right corner of the graph in terms of outlier, right? Like, if you're, like, looking at, right, if you're looking at just a graph of just, like, performances for the season for running backs, he has two games which are just complete outliers, especially if you're comparing them just to overall touches, right? Which we need to do, because there's no other way,
of course,
to project in terms of fantasy performance unless you have a solid idea of what a player's usage is going to look like. And think about how many times we've been burned on guys like this before. Kareem Hunt stands as a stark example just from earlier this season, where Kareem Hunt, by the way, was touching the ball a lot more, and his performances were still, I mean, this is the people are,
and his performances were insane. And here, how about this? What if you took Kareem Hunt after week one? So we'll even give you those first 2 weeks where he sustained the absurd upside performance, right? You're still, if you took him against any of the other big name running backs, the guys, the proven guys with track records, great usage, great yards per touch, and all that sort of thing, you would have lost every other week except for the next 2 weeks after week one. So congratulations, you caught your lightning in a bottle for 2 weeks, and then you lost for 10 weeks in a row. So yeah, I think that's Kareem Hunt is such a great example of the cautionary tale when it comes to just projecting some kind of new guy that sort of comes out of nowhere, lights the world on fire. Kamara is much more a favorite to become Kareem Hunt than he is to become LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, just in terms, and last, this is the last note on Kamara. I mean, just in terms of volatility, when you look at his season numbers, Kamara actually isn't all that much more volatile than a Bell or a Gurley. The thing with his, though, the reason this number is a little skewed is because he doesn't look as volatile because he scored so many touchdowns, right? If we were to remove the touchdown piece from his scoring, and which is a little unfair, for sure, because he has scored the touchdowns, but his touchdowns have almost primarily come outside of the 10-yard line. And we've seen historically, this is just another stat that's completely unsustainable. If you are not the guy that gets the ball down and close, and when I say down and close, I mean, you know, first and goal from the five, something like that, or even closer, usually. If you are not the guy to do that on your team, you are almost always not going to be the team's leading rushing touchdown, lead the team in rushing touchdowns, just because that is where, historically, where the majority of rushing touchdowns come from. And Kamara is not the guy as long as Ingram is there. So while the volatility numbers don't actually even look that bad on their face, they're still completely being propped up by the touchdowns. All right. Some other challenges that were out there this week that I found to be pretty interesting. Some revolve around players that are going, I would call, in different directions, right? We mentioned Kareem Hunt out there. And Kareem Hunt is a guy who, you know, in all fairness, we have not been projecting him like for basement level performances over the last couple of weeks, because it's been caught between, sometimes there's a narrative piece, they switch the offensive coordinator, the Vegas prop looks pretty good on him. There's been lots of little reasons to kind of, he's had great matchups in the last few weeks. There's been lots of little reasons to talk yourself into Kareem Hunt. And still we've kind of gone back and forth. And I did see some Kareem Hunt challenges out there this week that I'm wondering your opinion on. One was Kareem Hunt versus Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde is a guy now, and I'm talking about teams going in different directions. The move from CJ Beathard to Jimmy Garoppolo in terms of who's under center for the 49ers seems like it is a massive upgrade. And again, we only have really one performance from Garoppolo, and he was fine. And we have, you know, some of his time in New Orleans, and we have, you know, how people kind of in the industry kind of feel about him, which is to say they've been very high in him. A lot of teams have been very high in him for so long, and he was a great trade bait for New England. Do you see the move? One, do you have a clear feeling about which side you would like to take in that challenge? And two, do you feel like hide? Well, let's start here. Do you have a way that you would want to go in that challenge?
Yeah, I'd be thrilled to accept the Hyde side of that deal. I think Hyde is kind of undervalued, generally speaking. Like, he does a lot, has targeted a lot in the passing game, pretty decent on a yards per carry basis, all things considered. And I think his stock is just super low. So I think you can get this kind of challenge accepted with no problem at all.
Yeah, I think that, and we saw last week at least that the Niners were able to control the ball more on offense. Like, one of their problems this year had been that they just, a lot of three and outs, a lot of incomplete passes. Other teams run it up on them because they're just getting outsized possessions. And then last week we just saw them move toward a ground game and just an overall better offense that will allow them to stay on the field longer. So if our stock is going up on Hyde and down on Hunt, and I don't know if you're going to take. I'm not sure how much you're going to get accepted on the Hunt side. Now, again, I did accept that one. That one was thrown out there, Hunt versus Hyde. I took the Carlos Hyde side of it. But let's talk about some other running backs with Carlos Hyde that you might want to put. I mean, is there a group of guys in? Look, if we use FanDuel pricing, which is sometimes a good proxy for just where players fall in terms of comparison, is there another guy in the Carlos Hyde salary range? He's 6,000. He's 6,000 on DraftKings. Is there a guy where in his salary range where you would start feeling pretty confident going out there? And to other guys in his range are Devontae Freeman, Jamal Williams, Alfred Morris, and Christian McCaffrey. Among that group that I said, do you think that we would be able to get any challenges accepted, or is there anyone in that group that you like more than Hyde?
Yeah, I like Jamal Williams better than Hyde, probably. I think we saw Williams' role is pretty secure last week. I think the offense there is a little bit more consistent, and I think for that reason, he probably, and again, on no halftime, a lot of the time we're just looking for a guy who's going to kind of get his opportunity and perform consistently with that opportunity. And I see Williams as the safest guy in that group overall. After that, I'm not super excited about anyone else in that group. I would probably take Hyde over McCaffrey. And who was the other guy you said?
Alfred Morris is an interesting one too.
But yeah, Morris I think is interesting too, for sure. Yeah, I think I would take Morris over Hyde too.
Yeah, those are ones that I think, see, and this is where you can maybe exploit some things on no halftime as well, because there's a chance, there are some interesting guys in that pricing tier. I would say Morris, Hyde, and Williams are all coming fairly cheap on FanDuel. And I think that you could, and usually I keep saying FanDuel pricing here just as a good way to sort of, like, if you are modeling yourself for no halftime and trying to figure out what you can get accepted into different tiers. I think
because other people are going to go look and say, oh, well, this guy's 400 more on these other sites. And so maybe I'm getting a value here, right?
Right. So you look up, you take this small basket of running backs, which I think are all in great spots. Morris is in a great spot here. They seem like they're content to just give him the ball, especially with Dak Prescott really struggling in the short term. He's had outsized touches for at least one more week. I believe this is the last week of Ezekiel Elliott's suspension. He might have one more week on it. But you get him, you get Carlos Hyde, who's seen a bump up in touches, and then clearly Jamal Williams, who we mentioned. And now you start looking up into some more expensive guys. So those guys compared to someone like Jordan Howard. Now, Jordan Howard has seen a lot of touches at times this season. He's had 20 or more touches plenty of times. For a while, he was sitting in the top group, in and around the top group of running backs in terms of overall usage per game. And we've seen that drop a little bit in the short term. Had a very bad week last week against the aforementioned 49ers, who controlled the game the entire time. When Chicago is in a good spot, it seems like they want to give Howard the ball, but would you feel comfortable throwing out challenges where you were against Howard with all the guys mentioned above, or does he fit somewhere into that group?
Yeah, Howard's probably in the middle of that group. I think I'd like Hyde and Morris better. I probably like Howard better than, say, McCaffrey. I hate Kareem Hunt. I think he and Jordan Howard kind of are similar in my mind. I've really falling out of love with Jordan Howard too. I think the opportunity, I think we're kind of misled by the opportunity early in the season, and I think it just hasn't stayed as consistent since then. So I'm kind of giving up on Hunt here.
I think you could throw out those challenges, I believe, and probably have at least some of them accepted on Jordan Howard, because he is a name. He's a fantasy commodity. People have played them in their season long leagues. This is a guy that people want to start. You can look back to something in his game log and see performances here. His, you know, one of his problems, he plays for Chicago. They have no quarterback play, so it's going to be very inconsistent in terms of how often he's able to touch the ball. And then it's so funny too, because with Kareem Hunt, we're back into a weird situation with him, because every week there's just one other little reason to think about playing Kareem Hunt. This week he gets to play against Oakland, who's the very worst defense in all football, and so and they're
that's not a good big.
It's really interesting because there has been this one. There's been things each week that have said maybe this is the week. You know, this he's playing the Giants defense, are huge, they're huge favorites. And then the weather kind of gets them, they get away from him in the weather game, and then he's just kind of bad. And then last week, oh, they're moving the offensive coordinator, and then you know, everyone's been screaming to kind of get the run game going early. Maybe if the move to the new OC will kind of do that. And no, they just kind of pass all the time. And you're like, okay, finally we're going to be done with this guy. And then, or finally we're done with even having reasons to think about it. And now all of a sudden they're kind of bigger home favorites against the very worst defense in football, and no Charcandrick West, and it's all, I don't know. Kareem Hunt seems like he's just corrupt. There's always one little reason to kind of bring him back onto the Raiders. So just to recap some of these running back thoughts.
You said the Raider, by the way, which is a good punt, because I think you meant radar.
Oh, radar. Yeah, it's just Freudian slip based on what I'm talking about with Oakland. Okay. Yeah, so I think in summary about some of these running backs, taking some of these cheaper guys and looking at some of their opportunity feels like a spot that you can get some challenges accepted. And like I said, there are some guys. I mean, honestly, I would take some of these guys. They're coming close to even the Mark Ingrams of the world, right? Just because there are games where these guys aren't going to score touchdowns and the touches aren't going to be completely there. And I think you have a nice spot. So anyway, I think that's one of the strategies I would take. What else is standing out to you this week?
Well, yeah, I think that's a pretty good overall summary of the running back situation. I think there is a lot of value to be had in that sort of mid-range where people are going to have difficulty making up their minds. I'm curious to know what you think about wide receiver, though, because I think we have a couple, like I was reading through our Cash Games article in preparation for this podcast and noticed that we're high on a few guys at higher price points than some people might not be. So we had Hopkins and Allen ranked as the two top overall Cash Game plays per your opinion. There's obviously other bigger name wide receivers out there than those guys. Can you make a case for those guys? And maybe talk about how you would pair them off against people like Julio Jones or maybe Antonio Brown this week.
Yeah, well, just as a reminder for that Cash Game, those two guys aren't on the main slate of games. So that was where Julio plays the Thursday night and Antonio Brown is on the Sunday night game. So if I were to conclude those guys, it's funny. I think I would take them at different. I would have different opinions about both. So,
Julio Jones, you say you're considering him. He is the lowest in terms of fantasy points per game out of that whole group, in spite of his incredible 44 fantasy point performance a couple of weeks ago, right? So I don't think it's unreasonable to wonder if you would take other guys over him in any given week.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just, sorry. What I was going to say was I would not take Brown over those two guys. I would take Brown over those two guys, and I would take Hopkins and Allen over Julio. By a lot, I think. Julio is a guy that we talked about in the No Halftime podcast on our own podcast before. His performances are simply just too volatile to think
from
about
45 rostering. Fantasy points to three. that's pretty volatile.
It's just not consistent. He is a bad matchup this week with Marshawn Lattimore coming back. So I think there's a lot of reasons to not like Julio in this matchup. But he's almost a guy matchup independent that I would not take in No Halftime just because we've just seen a long track record of him just being all over the place in terms of performance. And he goes out, he slaughters Tampa Bay for just basically like, an all-time performance, and then completely disappears the next game in like not a terrible matchup. So I just don't know. I guess he had Xavier Rhodes, but we have multiple seasons worth of Julio. Now, I do think the question about the Hopkins and Allen one is an interesting one because these guys are very close, and I actually have seen these challenges out there in Hopkins versus Allen.
Really?
Is this a situation where? Oh yeah, is this a situation? I have an opinion, though it's not a strong one, about kind of where to land here. But
I have a strong opinion, Doug.
If you would you land on one side of this? It's mostly that one. Where do you land on Hopkins versus Allen?
I land on Allen. I mean, Hopkins, I recognize that the target share is similar between the two right now in their current quarterback situations, but Allen has just been doing it. I mean, 3 weeks in a row, 13 or 14 targets, double-digit receptions, and a touchdown plus in each of those weeks. This is the guy that we thought he would be early in the season. He's kind of rounded out that way. I think he's just one. I think he's still just underpriced, frankly, relative to his current opportunity and a totally reasonable matchup here with Washington. So yeah, from top to bottom, I just love the Allen spot here.
It's actually closer for me than it is for you. It usually wouldn't be, because I'm a big Keenan Allen truther as well. So we've been kind of we've been talking about him for a lot of this season. So it's not for lack of what I, you know, what I think or don't think about Allen. It's more actually just kind of some of the matchup concerns this week. So he does not draw a great matchup this week. And that these things kind of do matter. Now he's not going to, they're facing the Redskins. He's not going to get a Josh Norman shadow treatment, but he's going to and they'll probably end up just lining him up opposite of Norman on the other side of Norman, because if you know Josh Norman staying in one place and you have a guy like Allen that can move around, you don't need to line him up against their best corner. But they have a slot defender that could actually give him problems in Kendall Fuller.
So this is where I sometimes struggle, but with secondary ratings, we use Pro Football Focus to evaluate a lot of this stuff. I think they do terrific work. I do think sometimes though I wind up having concerns, because Washington this season allowing 7.3 yards per attempt, which is the bottom 10 total in the league. So if you're telling me that Norman is going to take away one receiver, I'm listening. But if you can line up away from Norman, you're telling me I can't get a positive matchup outside of him. That just strikes me as not passing. And I'm a notorious critic of the eyeball test, but that just doesn't sort of pass my own internal eyeball test.
He's overall getting a plus matchup. So it's not that part of it. And again, these guys in our system are basically tied. So it's not. It's mostly that I just don't see one as crazy higher than the other.
Right.
Hopkins, according to them, is drawing the very best matchup you can have this week. The San Francisco secondary is complete garbage, and they have some of the lowest rated. They just have some of the lowest rated cornerbacks in all of football, and I think that's where it's coming to be a little closer. And I get that the problem with Hopkins is the conversions on his targets are just completely terrible. He gets crazy amount of looks because they just throw them over and over and over again. But and he's having trouble converting some of those, or not even trouble converting them. He's just not converting a ton of them. And then all of a sudden you're going to get a week where you have three cornerbacks in Williams, Witherspoon, and Jontae Johnson that rate very, very poorly. And they can move him all around the field. So I think that's where it actually gets a little bit. It does get a little bit closer to me. I think from a safety perspective, I'm with you. I would probably choose Allen. And then the matchup for me just makes it a little closer than I probably would have thought it would have been going in.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense to me. I understand why it's close. I just feel like with how the targets can spread, or the conversion ratio from targets to receptions on Hopkins is so dramatic. And I know that the target upside is also really high, but I just feel like when on no halftime, when I'm just trying to hit the middle and figure out the guys that are going to be better on week to week, it's really hard for Hopkins to really want to climb above a guy like Allen. Like, I would love Hopkins against, I'm trying to think, like, because none of these guys are good anymore, but say like T.Y. Hilton or Mike Evans or, Amari Cooper, when these guys were actually, or Julio Jones, falls into this category, I would think Hopkins actually is kind of underratedly safe. Like, he's safer than he appears on paper. I just think Allen is one of the very most safe wide receivers in all the football. So I just said all of the football too, so that was pretty professional sounding, but it's just going to be hard for anyone outside of Antonio Brown right now to go above Allen for me.
Among the top 10 fantasy scoring wide receivers on the season, Hopkins has the best consistency rating of them all.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think it's a little bit difficult to apply that as a way to project consistency going forward in the case of Hopkins, just because he's done it in different ways. Maybe that's a credit to him. I don't know. But it's been like different quarterbacks, and I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm just... I'm letting my eyes fail me here. I mean, as I look down the game logs, I see that the numbers oftentimes look the same for him. So I'm hearing that, but I just feel like Allen's role is a little bit different right now than it had been earlier in the season. And I don't know, maybe I'm just falling subject to small sample size. Maybe we should issue our own no halftime challenge between each other, Doug, but it doesn't sound like you're really definitive either way. You just think it's close.
I just think it's close. I think okay. That's mostly what it is. I find that it's interesting because when you look at Keenan Allen's, this is when we just talk about looking at recent performance. When you look at Keenan Allen's recent performance, the guy leads the league in targets over the last 4 weeks. He's been amazing. Yeah. Right? You can make it a case. He's been the best wide receiver over the last 4 weeks. So it's not a case against Allen necessarily, but I was just more like, I was more surprised in looking at it more closely. I never really want to play DeAndre Hopkins for the reason that you are kind of, eloquating on, because you have the same fears that I do. And it just ends up being, I'm wondering if those fears are something that's creeping into the overall thought process. Let me throw out some other wide receiver challenges here that I did see out there and that I kind of found to be interesting. Actually, one guy you mentioned before was Mike Evans. So there was a challenge out there for Mike Evans versus Jameson Crowder.
I actually have Jameson Crowder pulled up on my screen right now as a guy I was going to bring up.
Okay, so then I have a feeling which way you're going to take here. Yeah. Would you lean the Crowder side?
Of course, yeah.
On Evans. It's really interesting because when you look at those two guys, I think that would be, if you were to throw that out going the other way, this was that person gets Evans and we would get Crowder. I instantly accepted that one. I think that it seems kind of obvious to me that Crowder's the better play. And I have a feeling that a vast majority of the fantasy community would take Evans in this matchup. Would you feel confident taking a bunch of just different Crowder versus Evans challenges this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think Crowder, since basically the Dallas game on the 29th of October, he has been, the minimum targets he's had is 7, then 8, 10, 11, and 13. The guy is targeted like a number one receiver. He's not targeting a lot of the downfield throws, but he can actually do a little bit after the catch too. And he's pretty good at converting targets into receptions. And this game slated to have a pretty high total this week. I think Crowder is a sneaky play for regardless of your DFS format, but particularly this week, I think, you know, taking him against a guy like Mike Evans, taking him against Dez, I would like to do as well. Here's one that might be a little bit closer. What about him versus Alshon Jeffrey?
Crowder versus Alshon?
Yeah.
I probably would take Alshon and it would be close. The difference.
Pretty close.
The difference between like where I see Mike Evans is, Mike Evans is a fantasy name that has had trouble turning it into like full on consistent performance, right? Like, and I get that Jameis was hurt for a couple of weeks and that probably makes a difference. Jameis came back last week in an overtime game. Well, I guess they never got a possession in overtime, but he had 6 targets, 2 receptions for 33 yards. And we've just seen this enough from Evans over his career that they'll feed him the ball. And he just has a big time problem with conversions, right? He just like has problems with conversions. He has problems with just completely at times just getting scripted out of the game, like where other teams will just take him out because they know that Tampa Bay just doesn't have any other real way to threaten downfield with anyone. So I think Evans is one of those guys that strikes me as a big name, and he probably has a big game in him. I mean, he has not topped 100 yards in a receiving in a game this season. Which is, I think I'm kind of feeling pretty surprised about it. And then not all that surprised about it because he's just kind of overrated. And I think you can get a lot of challenges accepted against him. And then I said, like you said,
I think Alshon Jeffrey's overrated too. Like if you look down these game logs, since Crowder has moved into this role, he's had more receiving yards than Jeffrey every single week. Talk about a guy who doesn't hit 100 yards receiving. Alshon Jeffrey also meets that category as well. And I know the Eagles are a cool story this season, but Jeffrey this season, his highest overall receiving yard total was 92. He had the 2 touchdown week against Denver, but basically outside of that, he's been trash on this price, like the prices that he's seeing across some of the other sites. So I love going against a guy like Alshon Jeffrey, who's kind of buzz, especially, I mean, this is a theme that we've hit on in previous No Halftime Takeover podcasts, but especially when a guy's buzz is coming from scoring a lot of touchdowns. Kamara falls in this category a little bit as well. That's a time when I'm always a buyer. So whenever I can see someone's price climbing up and probably their industry perception elsewhere climbing as a result of that, I'm just like chomping at the bit to take challenges against that guy.
And it's pretty easy. I mean, it's not easy, but it's a quick and dirty way to just, when you're saying like, oh, you know, are they running good on touchdowns? Are they getting lucky on touchdowns? Or is most of their performance, all you have to do is really just look at target leaders compared to how many touchdowns they have. So if you just look at wide receivers this season and you just kind of, and this is like just a quick, dirty glance at how to do it.
Yeah, it's not perfect. I agree. It's worth something.
Right. So guys that maybe are getting quote lucky on touchdowns this year, guys like Marvin Jones, guys like Robbie Anderson, and I'm saying lucky because I'm saying they have as many touchdowns as DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, some of these other Devontae Adams with, I don't know, 20 at times 15-20% less targets. Now, are they 15-20% better than the guys we just mentioned because and that's why they're scoring their touchdowns? Or does that 15-20% come from somewhere else? In this case, maybe just a little bit of luck, right? So like and I really feel like that's like, again, it's not perfect, but it's a very quick and easy way to just say who's average fantasy point. Because a lot of people just look at average fantasy as a way to just try to figure out, is this guy good? Like, is Robbie Anderson good? Well, the quickest way to look is just see what he's averaging fantasy points per game. Oh, he's averaging, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's probably pretty high considering his touchdown share has been pretty high. And yet all of a sudden, there's just a lot of these other numbers that don't line up. Now, Jeffrey, for me, does not fall completely into that category. He's one of the target leaders at 95, and his touchdowns are kind of right in line with some of the other guys that I mentioned. Maybe a little tick high, not completely crazy. But, you know, those Marvin Jones, Robbie Anderson guys do really stand out as to say, like, oh, well, what's happening here? Is our fantasy performance look great because of one thing or the other thing? Or then you can like look at the opposite direction, look at Jarvis Landry, who has 123 targets and only 6 touchdowns. Now, there's other problems there. He happens to play Miami, who stink, and they have trouble just getting close to the end zone at times. So maybe that's like not a perfect thing either. But
well, be careful on Jeffrey too, though, here, because, and I don't want to go too deep on him, but the conversion rate on Jeffrey has been laughably terrible this season. So 95 targets, that's great. That's a really high number. He's got 47 receptions on that number of targets. Robbie Anderson has more receptions than Alshon Jeffrey this season. Zach Ertz has more receptions. Marvin Jones Jr. has more receptions than Alshon Jeffrey. Kenny Stills has more receptions than Alshon Jeffrey. Jeffrey's been, for all the targets he gets, I feel like that's damning him with how inconsistent he's been and how little he's been able to do with them. I think he's like a classic guy that I would want to target.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. He probably does fall into that Mike Evans category of maybe I just kind of thought he was better. Well, I didn't.
Yeah, just how he's being used right now. It might not even be his own skill set. Like, but if they're just trying to take risks to him, yeah, like, you know, him and Amari Cooper, their lines are remarkably similar. If Amari Cooper had 10 more targets, they'd basically be the same guy.
Oh, Amari Cooper, don't even get me started on him. The inconsistent, that guy's the poster child for inconsistency. It's actually not even fair. Like, he's at the Hall of Fame. Like, he's the first inductee to the Hall of Fame of inconsistent. Other ones that were out there. The aforementioned Marvin Jones was out there in a challenge versus Tyreek Hill. They both kind of strike me as sort of like the same kind of inconsistent, but has big upside. We did see some huge plays from Hill last week. Any way that you kind of lean in that matchup?
Oh, yeah, that's really, really close. I think I'd probably take Tyreek Hill. I probably just wouldn't accept the challenge, if I'm being honest. I think they're both inconsistent enough that I feel like I can do better. But when you look at the two of them, their lines on the season are super similar. Like, the targets are almost identical, 88 and 86 targets. Jones has 2 more touchdowns than Hill. The big difference maker is that Hill's converted 12 more of his targets into receptions. But it's kind of strange because basically Hill's line is moved by just last week's incredible performance. So that one's close enough to where, and Jones's role sort of shifted around based on matchup, based on their preference for passing to Tate, based on how their running backs are performing and how healthy they are. So I feel like his role is probably a little bit more secure going forward.
Yeah, it's crazy what 1 week can do in the terms of NFL performance.
That's why NFL's so dumb with this. Like, it just changes so fast, right?
It's not a great way to sell the product, calling someone dumb. But you can move so quickly from being really kind of like, you know, middle of the road, and then one performance just kind of puts you into the next category. And then it makes it very difficult to judge in terms of like what we can expect going forward when, you know, we're basically get a 10%, you know, we're one game represents maybe 10% of the overall performance. I know it's a little wrong. It's like 8%, but that's just still kind of a lot. Like, especially if you have a complete outlier game, and Tyreek Hill is kind of the king of outlier games, right? We've seen this many times from him where nothing can kind of happen for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then all of a sudden he has a good matchup and he's downfield and now he's scoring multiple long touchdowns. So I think that it's from that point of view, I do find it to be sometimes hard to just evaluate what the overall sense is, especially when all the other factors are basically the same, you know, same quarterback, same running back, same coaching staff. Like, where do we want to land on some of these guys? One final challenge here before we get out of here. One that was up there was, and this is just the last wide receiver one, Stephon Diggs versus Golden Tate. How worried are we with Stafford in terms of Matthew Stafford has a hand injury right now, but he's expected to play. When we want to look at injuries to starting quarterbacks, how much do we want to, and this is, you know, this is really for DFS kind of writ large, but it makes sense for when we're talking about challenges. How much do we want to evaluate possible injuries to a quarterback when we're looking at that quarterback's wide receivers? Like, if the team is comfortable enough throwing out a guy like Stafford, who is a pretty good, you know, he's a good quarterback. If they are comfortable enough doing it, are we comfortable enough projecting players at their kind of mean weighted performance, or are we willing to maybe give them a tick down because the, I don't know, a hand injury to a quarterback seems like a place that has would have some concern?
Right. So I think it's a little bit more complicated than just trusting the team in a scenario like this. There's a lot going on with the Lions, right? So first and foremost, the nature of the injury. A hand injury is not typically the type of thing that we're worried about someone aggravating and causing more long-term problems in the same way like a knee or an ankle or a shoulder, you know, soft tissue sort of injury would be. So from that perspective, I wouldn't expect that Detroit would feel the need to be overly cautious here. It could certainly affect performance. And so then we want to look at the team and figure out, you know, how they're performing, what their kind of goals for the season are. Now, coming off back-to-back losses, Detroit's playoff chances are like greatly diminished at this point, but they're still 6-6. And I don't think that they're ready to just call it a season quite yet. Like they're just, let's see here. Yeah, they're two games out of the wild card. So that's going to be pretty difficult, but not impossible. And I think for that reason, they have every reason to give it their best possible try. So I would suspect Stafford playing is as much a result of them just trying really hard to win rather than anything else. Now, and another thing to keep in mind when it comes to accepting no halftime challenges is you only need to accept challenges that you think are great. So if you think that there just raises too much uncertainty for you to take the Jones Jr. side or the Tate side, then by all means, just don't take those sides of those bets. I think for similar reasons, I wouldn't probably take Diggs against them because the Diggs situation has been very uncertain as well. Now, I don't know if there's another wide receiver, and I'm sure you're just probably saw this challenge somewhere and that's why you're calling it out, but I would probably think, oh, you know, this is an area where I could get some value. Why don't I go ahead and find some other wide receivers in that same price range and issue challenges for those guys, like maybe Jarvis Landry, Devontae Adams. I'm not sure you could even get these challenges accepted because they're so one-sided.
Well, I got one for you.
How about, go ahead.
How about Sterling Shepard?
Oh, I would love Shepard. Sterling Shepard. That's a great one to bring up.
Would Eli Manning coming back this week, after the inexplicable one game absence just to ruin his streak for reasons that are completely unknown, to start Geno Smith, they fire everybody, and now Eli is going to be back under center with a guy that they've shown the willingness to kind of target for double-digit targets at times. It's funny, actually, because Shepard has really only played like two games after the Odell Beckham injury. So we don't even have a huge, it seems like, because the Beckham injury happened so long ago, but Shepard had injury concerns of his own and he was dealing with migraines for a couple weeks. So he has actually not played a ton. That's also kept, some DFS places kept his price down pretty low. Would you feel more comfortable taking Shepard over maybe just kind of all those guys we just mentioned in that tier?
I would definitely want to take him over Jones, Tate, and Diggs for sure. I would not want to take him over guys like Devontae Adams though.
What about over like Tyreek Hill and the group that we mentioned before that?
No, I'd probably rather take Tyreek. Or I think if I saw that challenge was sitting there, I probably would take Tyreek Hill. I know Shepard was really, really good against San Francisco, but he was only just like okay against LA the week before that. I don't know. That one might be close enough to where I would probably just let it pass, which is probably saying something for Shepard and probably speaks to the types of challenges you could get accepted for him. But that being said, Doug, we are running low on our No Halftime Takeover podcast challenge. They are not like us where they just run podcasts deep into the night. So I think we'll probably get going here. But as we said, if you are listening on the DFSR feed, head on over to nohalftime.com, download the app, use promo code DFSR. You can get a 50% deposit bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. And it really is. You can probably hear the excitement in our voice. It's one of the best ways to play DFS in a way that, first of all, reduces your variance because you're just picking whatever challenges you want. And it probably increases your edge too, because you don't have to worry about those weeks where you love seven of the pieces in your lineup, but two don't quite fit. And you spend that last, hour leading up to the lineup lock, just moving all those guys around. No Halftime doesn't make you worry about any of that stuff. So we love No Halftime. Check them out, nohalftime.com, promo code DFSR to get started now.